From HanselMinutes.com, it's Hansel Minutes, a weekly discussion with web developer and technologist Scott Hanselman. This is Lawrence Ryan announcing show number 333, recorded live Thursday, August 16th, 2012. Support for Hansel Minutes is provided by Telerik, offering the best in developer tools and support. Online at telerik.com. And by franklins.net, training developers to work smarter. And now offering Gesture Pack, a powerful gesture recording and recognition system for Microsoft Kinect for Windows developers. Details at gesturepak.com. In this episode, Scott talks with Brad Wilson about using Windows 8.
Hi, this is Scott Hanselman. This is another episode of Hansel Minutes, and today I'm talking to my buddy Brad Wilson. How are you, sir?
I am awesome. How are you?
Well, I am. I've upgraded to Windows 8, so I don't know how that makes me. That makes me. That makes me a person that just couldn't help himself. Yesterday, it was about, I don't know, two or three, and I was working on some stuff, and I said, you know, I have my Windows 7 desktop, the ultimate developer PC.
Yep.
Remember the one that I made with Jeff Atwood.
Jeff Atwood.
And this is the one where I'm actually running your 30-inch monitor. This is the monitor that you sold me.
Which is, I still miss, but I'm glad it's got a good home.
Why did you sell me this monitor? You bought a better one?
I bought a 27-inch iMac.
Oh, I remember. Okay. All in one monitor and computer.
Exactly.
Okay. So I'm running your 30-inch monitor, and then I've got my 24 and my 27 next to it. And I had been not upgrading to Windows 8 simply because it seemed like it didn't make any sense for a multiple monitor machine. But, you know, for some reason, I always upgrade to new operating systems when there's like, A, no reason to do it other than it's new and shiny, or B, there's some important work that needs to be done the next day. So clearly, I take a break from that important work and then upgrade my entire operating system.
And for me, it's usually the opposite. I use the new and shiny thing until work needs to be done, and then I end up having to install the old thing.
I seem to remember upgrading to Windows 3.1 like the night before the SATs. You know what I mean? It's like, I'll take a small break here, like somewhere in like 1990 or something. I'm like, I'll take a break and install a beta operating system.
So a tiny bit of procrastination in your blood.
Yeah, and then inevitably that will destroy the world and destroy my computer and I'll lose everything. But how long have you been running Windows 8?
Since about the time of the first build conference last October.
Seriously?
Yeah, absolutely. I started running that version on one of my laptops to start with, but then not long after that, I bought the Samsung Slate, which is the commercial version of the thing they gave away at Build, and I've been running Windows 8 on that ever since. I mean, it showed up with Windows 7, and it immediately got obliterated to put Windows 8 on it, because why would you buy this nice, shiny touch thing and not put Windows 8 on it? I wouldn't know.
But you paid your own money for it? Because we didn't get one.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I paid my own money.
Wow.
I caught it on sale. Chris, you know, there was a nice Christmas sale at the Microsoft store.
Wow, okay. That's hardcore. I didn't realize. I thought you'd only been running it for a couple of weeks.
No. Well, I've at home, so I've been running it on the Slate, which is kind of like a home PC that I take to work. Mm-hmm. At home, I still, you know, the MSDN stuff just came out yesterday because we're, you know, talking about this on August 16th. So it just came out yesterday. So this weekend I will upgrade my gaming PC, which has been the one that I'm always reluctant to do because it's, you know, it always feels to me like gaming is this thing that makes PCs very touchy. And so any change seems bad. But
yeah, yeah. I tried to run Diablo yesterday and it told me that it thought that my video card was out of date. And I thought that was a very kind of dramatic message. And I was like, oh, Lord, here I am running some two-year-old video card driver, and it was from March. I'm like, really? When did a five-month-old video driver become incredibly old and dangerous to run?
Well, apparently they've been releasing drivers like Mad Men trying to sort of get ready for Windows 8. So I would imagine that's why it's out of date.
So should I just upgrade? I mean, should I get get the new drivers? I mean, would it be presumed? I can install Windows 7 drivers on Windows 8, right?
You can install Windows 7 drivers. I'm assuming you're using one of NVIDIA or ATI, and they both have Windows 8 drivers, although I think they consider them to be beta drivers.
Oh,
but they have drivers for Windows 8. And in addition to the ones that are in the box, you know, it depends on how new your video card is, whether or not there's an in-box driver. Because I know some of the really old cards, they used to be like the old DirectX 9 cards, mm-hmm. don't have drivers. Because, of course, Windows 8 wants you to have DirectX 10. So
what is that? You just said in-box drivers. Tell the listeners what an in-box driver is and why I should, and how I would make a decision based on an in-box driver versus non.
When I use the phrase inbox driver, what I mean is the driver that comes with Windows 8. So there will be drivers for a whole variety of hardware devices that ship along with Windows 8. So you don't have to download anything. You don't have to run anybody's install CD. The stuff will just be there. Video drivers are kind of the weird one for me because you always feel like, you know, hey, I could get 3% more performance if I go grab the driver, you know, the latest driver off of the manufacturer's website. But other than that, I generally run with the driver that comes with the OS if it supports it. So, you know, I don't install custom sound card drivers or custom chipset drivers or anything like that. If everything's kind of supported out of the box, then I just leave it alone.
So drivers like that, if I can get a Windows installation to run without installing drivers, then presumably that's going to be a more stable system or the most stable system possible.
Right. Now, the one thing that's kind of odd with video drivers, in particular with Windows 8, you might not realize you're running a less than optimal driver is the sort of built-in base driver, which I think they call Microsoft Base Video now, actually will run, you know, the full resolution of your monitor. You should be able to tell that, hey, I'm running the built-in video driver and not the real one because it's running me at, you know, 1024 or something like that. Mm-hmm. But the built-in driver will run pretty much anything your graphics card can do and your monitor can do. It just won't necessarily be hardware accelerated. So you do have to kind of look and check to make sure that it's when you look inside of Device Manager that it says, you know, yeah, my video card is an NVIDIA or an ATI or an Intel or whatever it is you have, as opposed to the Microsoft base video driver.
Okay. So I'm clicking around here and I just checked. It says my NVIDIA GTX 470 is running. It says NVIDIA, and then it says Microsoft Corporation. So it's actually saying that Windows signed them.
Sorry, that means you're running the driver that came in Windows 8. The one that was written or certified by us, basically.
Okay. But then it also says WDDM, which I think is like Windows Device Driver Model. But it says WDDM 1.2. And that makes me feel like maybe isn't there a 1.3? That might be oldish. So I might be running the ones that came with Windows 7 and then I upgraded.
The WDDM came about in Vista. And so when you see WDDM 1.0, that's a Vista era driver. Mm-hmm. And WDDM 1.1 is a Windows 7 era driver. And 1.2 is a Windows 8 era driver.
Oh, okay. So I do have new stuff then.
Yeah, you do have the newest stuff.
Okay, so I've got the newest in-box drivers. So I've got the drivers that came with Windows, and presumably for doing work about, you know, desktop work and running around, this will be fine. But if I want to get the new stuff, I would then upgrade and get the beta drivers. But these are, I'm looking at the beta drivers here, and it says June 27th for NVIDIA. So I'll probably wait a couple of months for a released version of a driver from NVIDIA. And that would give me, you know, X number of percentage more oomph in Diablo or whatever, I presume.
Chances are it will also give you more options. Like NVIDIA and ATI both ship with special applications that when you right-click, mm-hmm. You get like the NVIDIA control panel or the ATI command center, whatever they call it. And so running their drivers might give you additional software options as well. Like the video drivers that come with Windows 8 are probably, they're good for the stuff that's built into Windows 8, but they might not have any of the advanced tweaking you could do with the custom drivers.
Okay, well, that makes sense. Yeah, when I installed a Windows 8, I kind of thought about, just like, because I upgraded. I did two installs. So my desktop, I upgraded from Windows 7. My laptop, I torched it because I just wanted it to be super fresh. Interestingly, on my desktop, which was an upgrade, I only had 20 gigs of hard drive left. I did the upgrade, and then I ran disk cleanup, and I have 65 gigs left. So something fresh happened during the upgrade. I don't know if they cleaned up the side-by-side folders or something, but I ended up with 40 gigs more space than I had when I was done. So when I went through what I did right before I upgraded, I said to myself, what kind of controversial things are running in the tray? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I thought about like, you know, DVD drivers and Magic ISO, which is a ISO mounting thing. And anything I thought that would make it unstable. You know, it's kind of like preempting the little thing that would say, you really shouldn't be running this. You should turn it off for now while you do the upgrade. You know, stuff that I knew would be a bad idea. And once I did that, I didn't end up with really anything. It didn't complain about any of my software, which I thought was cool.
Yeah, I've found most everything is pretty compatible. The Magic ISO one's interesting because there's ISO mounting in the box in Windows 8 now, so you don't have to have any custom software for that.
Yeah, so I can just double-click on an ISO or actually a VHD and mount it directly without having to do anything. They just show up as files in Explorer, and you click on them, and there's a mount menu, and then you go off and do your thing. So that worked really well. What else do I have to deal with? Oh, one of the things that I thought was kind of cool was actually, I joked about this with a buddy of mine, saying that even though whatever we call it now, Windows Store thing, Windows tile and box applications are, even though they are dramatic and that the start menu is gone, the task manager is a good enough reason to upgrade. Like literally the task manager, which I end up keeping open on another monitor all the time anyway, is so much more useful now that you might as well just upgrade your entire operating system to get a better task manager. It has a startup tab now. Have you seen this?
I've seen a little bit of it.
So if you go to the startup tab, there is a new column called Startup Impact, and it tells you whether or not the application will slow down your application's your Windows rebooting. You should do that right now, actually. Are you in front of your machine?
Oh, that's cool. Yeah.
Yes.
So unfortunately, everything that has processes, high startup impact startup is Microsoft software.
Right. So then look at all the software. So like it says Google Drive is high startup impact. So that's cool. So I just disable. I right-click disable that. Dropbox. Okay, that makes sense. Skype was slowing down my machine. So there's lots of different pieces of software that have been warning me. Like, for example, I don't know if it's a Windows 8 thing. It's probably an Office thing. But Outlook earlier today said there's an add-in that's making Outlook start slowly. I was like, oh, that's awesome.
Oh, nice.
So it says you want to take this add-in that added 1 second of time to your Outlook running, and you want to slow it down or turn it off. And then the same thing happened in IE. Remember, IE9 added that feature. I launched IE, and IE says, this one add-in you have is making IE take an extra second to load. So I disabled Java and one other add-on. So I kind of like that. That seems to be the new thing, is to have software tell you that some other software, you know, is slowing it down.
Probably tired of getting blamed for, like, oh man, Outlook is so slow. No, it's not really Outlook. It's that indexing add-on you added.
Is that what it is? That's interesting, because Visual Studio does that now. Outlook does that in Windows, and they're all just basically saying it's not our fault. Is that the it's not our fault feature?
It apparently must be.
I like that. So you've been running this way longer than I have, and I tweeted yesterday that I was upgrading, and I think it was somebody said, well, call us in a week when you've used it without a touchscreen, because they were declaring that Windows 8 was unusable without a touchscreen.
That's ridiculous.
You have a touch. It is ridiculous?
Yeah, that's a ridiculous statement. That's a statement by somebody who hasn't used it.
Interesting. My
main machine at work is a three monitor machine running Windows 8 and no touch on any monitors, and I love it. I would not go back to Windows 7 at all.
Really? Why?
Yeah. Well, so first of all, the thing that like people say it's only good for touch. All I can think is they think that the start screen is a touch-centric thing. It works great with a mouse. Mm-hmm. All the things that I'm used to being able to do with a keyboard, like I hit the start key and start typing program names and they come up. I like the way they come up a lot better than in Windows 7. I like the start screen as an organization metaphor much better than the start menu. And everything is faster. I mean, I know it's kind of a subjective measurement, but the thing boots faster. The thing runs software faster. Mm. It just feels better.
It seemed on my laptop, I noticed that it seems to be using the laptop more effectively, and I tried to figure out why and saw that the virtual memory was smaller than in Windows 7. It had automatically made my swap file less because it knew I had 12 gigs of RAM. Because I know my numbers. I know the numbers that I set the thing to, and somehow those numbers changed. It seems to have better caching. I'm not sure why or how.
Yeah, it's clearly doing, you know, a lot better. Pretty much every app that I run seems to run better in Windows 8.
Hmm. You know, one thing I've noticed also is that they're moving towards a kind of it just works attitude. This is my opinion, but if you go to the task manager by default, it only shows one CPU. Like I've got 6 cores and 12 logical processors, and I actually have to right-click and say change to logical processors if I want to see which processor is being slow. Are you in Task Manager?
Yep, I see that.
So right-click on CPU and say change graph to logical processors?
Yep.
Yeah, yeah.
One graph to 8. Very nice.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Isn't that cool?
That is nice.
Yeah, there's a bunch of things that are blowing me away about this as well. So one of them, if you where is it? View, if you right-click, yeah, try this. Check this out. So the left-hand side there, which is performance, and you've got CPU, memory, and all that stuff,
mm-hmm.
Right-click on that and say summary view. You see how it collapses and makes this stack of little tiny spark lines?
Nice.
Then you can take that and just set it off in the corner. So now you get kind of like free little spark, you know, active spark lines. And then if you just double-click on any one of them, it will show you what's going on. And then you double-click away, and it will collapse again. So like right now, I can see my C drive is working hard. Double-click. Okay, and it says average response time, 5 milliseconds. It's writing at a megabyte a second right now, and then I double-click, and then it goes away again. Isn't that cool?
Oh, that's pretty cool. Yeah, that is really cool.
And then if you go to processes, check this out. Go to processes. And then you know how you've got CPU and we always sort by CPU.
Mm-hmm.
You can actually sort by network now or sort by disk. So sort by disk right now. Okay, so here we go. It looks like Windows search is what's taking up my disk right now. So when, you know, when I heard, if I hear the disk, I can't, it's an SSD, but theoretically, if I hear the disk moving, I can say, well, wait a second. Go to Task Manager, sort by disk. I can see that right now my disk is being indexed.
Yeah, it's very useful.
Yeah, it's super useful. I think you can. Can you? You know, I've always wanted to find out what services are running. Let me see here. I'm going to sort by name, and then I can go to. Here you go, service host. This is cool. So you see how you have all the service hosts that look like blue gears.
Mm-hmm.
You open them up, and you can actually see the services now running inside your service host, and then right click on the individual service and stop it from. Inside Task Manager in the processes tab. Yeah, yeah.
And what's even cooler is the service host tells you what context it's running in. So it says these services are running as local system or local service. So for the nerdly among us who want to know, you know, what credentials is this service running under? You know, what can this service actually do?
Mm.
This is useful information.
How did you see that?
So that when I see service host, I see 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 different service hosts.
Right, I do too.
And next to them, they say service host : local service, service host : local service network restricted, service host : local service no impersonation.
Oh, you're right. I see one here that says local service no network.
Right. So the things running in there don't have access to send any network data.
Well, that's cool. I also noticed that you've got categorization. So it says apps, background processes and Windows processes. It's kind of like, yeah, they don't mess with this stuff.
I assume their differentiation there between an app and a background process is whether or not the thing has a window. Oh. I see Google Chrome as an app. Okay. And then I see like 40 Google Chromes as background processes.
Right, but I see like Google Drive and Google Crash. I see 4 Google Crash handlers as a background process.
Yeah.
Interesting. You know, and I'm a hotkey guy, so I was really concerned about the whole, I don't know what to call it, the whole not Windows Classic. I'm sure they'll email us and tell us all what to say. I have no idea what the terms are now. I know that there's that whole Metro thing. But I hit Window X. Have you used Window X?
I love Window X.
See, that's crazy because Window X was a moderately useful hotkey before. It would bring up the mobility center. And the only purpose for Window X before was you'd hit Window X and you'd say presenting. And that was the, don't fall asleep button. And it's helpful only for people who are presenting. Or maybe yep. They're going to change their, whether they're projecting or whether they are in a certain power mode, right?
Yep.
But the first kind of hour of using Windows 8, I would hit Window and I'd go over into like wacky boxes and tiles world and I type in device manager. Let me do it right now. So I just typed in device manager and I'm frustrated because it's not showing up because device manager in Windows 8 is not an app, right? I mean, it is an app. It's just like it was before, except they separate apps, settings, and files. So when you hit Windows, that brings up apps. If you hit Windows W, that brings up settings, and you hit Windows F, that brings up files. And I kept having to remember, and that was really frustrating to me. Then I hit Window X, and what happens when you hit Window X in Windows 8?
Brings up a nice little right-click menu, basically, of all your useful shortcuts. Power options, event viewer, device manager, some great stuff.
It's like basically the power user's start menu. And ironically, it shows up in the lower left corner where the start menu used to show up, which is so weird.
You can also get it by right-clicking. You know, if you hover down to the left corner to see the start icon,
okay,
and you right-click, you'll get the menu.
Oh, okay. So right now, if I hover, meaning I throw the mouse into the corner, I get a little picture of the start menu, right-click, program files, power options, event viewer, device manager, disk management, command prompt and command prompt admin. And as I remember, there's a way to, not a supported way, but there is a way to hack into that menu that Rafael Rivera figured out.
Yeah, but there's a third-party tool out that I saw that allows you to put stuff there. Because they're all just shortcuts on your disk, but Windows seems to be particular about which ones of those shortcuts it'll actually listen to.
Yeah. Window X seems to be something that it's not a start menu. It's a quick launcher of some kind, but it's the one that I find myself using the most. And then I've also just gone and pinned all the different things to my desktop. So I'm spending probably 85-90% of my time in the desktop. I rarely see the boxes and whatever menu. Do you spend your time over there at all in the Windows 8 menu?
On my desktop PC that doesn't have touch, I really don't spend a whole lot of time with that menu up.
Mm-hmm.
It's pretty much all desktop. On my slate when I'm at home, it depends on how I'm using it, right? If I'm using it for development, then it'll be sitting at the desktop. But if I'm using it because I'm sitting on the couch and I'm surfing the web, then I'll use the apps on the start menu because they're more touch-friendly, generally speaking.
When I launched the start menu the first time on my 30-inch or your 30-inch, I was kind of immediately like, oh, man, you know, everything's so big. I want to see more stuff. I want more. I want to make use of all these pixels. So I was goofing around. I didn't realize this, but when I went to the lower right corner, that's where you get settings. So it's apps in the lower left, settings in the lower right. So I click on that, and I click on settings. And I don't know if you've seen this before or not. If you go to settings and then you click on tiles, there's a button or switch that says show more tiles. Have you made the change to this setting?
Oh, no. I've never even seen this before.
Dude, you're going to love this. So lower right corner, settings, tiles, or you just hit hit Windows C for charms, go to settings, and watch what happens when you hit show more tiles.
That's pretty cool.
Huh?
Shifts everything up to give you more space.
Right, exactly. So it basically says use all available space vertically, and then suddenly I can actually, on my 30-inch monitor, without making the tiles small, I can see effectively everything that I would want to run. So it's kind of like, almost like mission control on a Mac.
Yeah.
And then, of course, you know that you can right-click on any application and then say smaller or larger. So I took some of these apps that I don't really care about. Like here I've got messaging. Messaging is like the Facebook chat application that lets you chat with Windows Live and Facebook, but it's taking up double wide, and that's frustrating. So I right-click on it, and then I click smaller, and then I turn it into a half-size tile. And then I'll drag it somewhere else, and I don't have to look at it all the time.
You can also turn off, if a tile is displaying information you don't want it to display, you can turn off live tiles as well that same way.
Oh, is that how I can make it stop showing me your face?
You know, I'm your best Facebook friend.
It's true. Apparently, Facebook has decided, and it's just like, oh, there's Brad again. Yeah, it's showing my people all the time, and every once in a while, I'm like, why is this person showing up? I don't know how it's making those decisions, but it is kind of funny, though, because I'll see people I haven't seen in a while, and then I'll be like, oh, there's so-and-so. He's showing up on my desktop there.
And it's funny, the way I arrange my start menus is dramatically different between my desktop PC and my slate, because there's apps, you know, like the built-in apps that come with it that I use on the slate quite a bit that I hardly ever use on my desktop. People's a good example of one. When I'm at work, People is not really something I want to do while I'm at work, so I just get rid of it entirely. But I use it a lot at home because, of course, it keeps me up to date on Facebook and Twitter and all that stuff, so it's a pretty cool app.
I'm finding that on my desktop, which is the one with the 30-inch monitor, I'm more likely to use the news stuff. Like I'll kind of like lean back and slouch, and I'll read like a news app. And I also found another news app that's called Popular Science. Have you seen the Popular Science app?
No, not yet.
It's almost like kind of like The Verge or something, but it's focused just on science stuff. And I like apps that will give me like a graphic that that is live. So I'm leaning towards live tile apps more than non-live tile apps. I'm not really interested in an app that shows a pretty picture if it's not changing that picture all the time.
Yep.
So I'm finding that I'm rearranging my stuff mostly into news. So I've got like 6 or 7 news apps. I've got like NBC News and USA Today and Popular Science, and even the Wikipedia app will give you like a featured article. So I'll make this like super dashboard of news, which I didn't realize. It's funny. I give those talks on productivity, and I tell people exactly not to do that. And I've gone and I've taken all this new operating system, and rather than making it totally personal, I've made it totally impersonal and filled it with news information and stocks and stuff.
Yep.
And I'm making all my decisions based on what can this thing show me? I noticed also, do you use the Mail app? Because I've got Outlook 2013, but then there's the Mail application, which is a whole other thing.
I don't really use the Mail app. I use the Calendar app a lot. And in fact, one of the best things about Windows 8 for me is I've hooked my calendar up to all of my calendars, right? My personal calendar on Gmail, my work calendar at work. And then when the computer's locked and I come back to it and I need to go to a meeting, whereas before I need to have to unlock it to figure out where I'm going or maybe pull out my phone, I can just wake the screen up and it tells me what my next meeting is right there on the lock screen. Tells me where to go, which is, I think, is like one of those features you don't realize how awesome it is until you use it all the time. Because, I mean, think about what I would have to do before. It's like you have to Control-Alt-Delete, and then you have to type in your password, and then you have to go find Outlook. You have to launch Outlook. You have to, is it in the right view? Go into the calendar view. Go figure out what's next. And now I just look at the screen, and there it is.
Okay. And it will merge. It will merge them. Like, I don't want to merge stuff and accidentally end up like having all my contacts merged. I want to be able to turn stuff on and off.
Yeah. What's nice about the calendar is you basically assign different colors. And so you can tell, like, I have all my work stuff is one color and all my personal stuff is another. So you can see which things on my calendar, you know, came from where.
Okay. I'm doing that right now. Yeah, I could see the calendar being useful, particularly if I updated, like, my kitchen PC, you know, like the machine we use in the kitchen for family calendars and stuff.
Yep.
But I don't know. I don't think I could see myself using the Mail app.
The Mail app was a little bit under-featured for me. It's just, it's like 80% of the way there, but the 20% that it's missing for me, because I feel like I'm a power user, is enough to make it me not want to use it.
Yeah, I agree. I find that it's maybe my family could use it, but for work, I don't see it happening. Although, ironically, I end up leaving it open, but like on the tile menu, the Windows 8 menu, because I like the live tile. Like, I want to see that I've got a mail, or I want to see some subject of the next mail, but I don't want to click on the app. I'd like to click on it and go to Outlook. You know what I mean?
Right.
Yeah. Interesting. Have you written any apps yet?
I have not written any apps for the store yet. I honestly keep wanting to come up with something, and I don't really have any good ideas in the back of my head, which, you know, I guess that's a stopping point or not, but...
Yeah. I'm going to take Baby Smash and port it over. For listeners who aren't familiar, Baby Smash is an app I use to teach myself XAML, and you can get it for free at babysmash.com. It's good for toddlers. So I thought that'd be fun to port Baby Smash to Windows 8, and I thought I'd do it twice, once in XAML and C#, and once in HTML5 and JavaScript.
Well, that'll be fun.
Yeah. So, Anna, if you want to work on that with me, I'm you know, got to figure out something. But yeah, I mean, people are writing apps so fast. It's like every time I come up with an idea, like I wanted to do a flight tracker, and well, okay, that was done already. Flight tracker is finished. So it's like, how, you know, I got to have that killer idea.
Yeah, and I think Baby Smash would work well because, you know, people will get a slate like the Samsung or maybe the exactly. Surface when it comes out, and, you know, kind of like people would use. You had a version for the iPad, right?
Yeah, a buddy did an iPad version. And I'm thinking also it's time for Toddler Smash. My kids are old enough now that I want to make more of a typewriter game. So I think I might use the opportunity not just to learn Windows 8 development, but also update it to something a little more useful for my kids because they're older.
Yeah, that seems like a good idea.
Yeah, cool. All right. Well, thanks for chatting with me about Windows 8. I know that you were you're kind of a Mac guy, and that you would give it to me straight.
Yeah, it's funny. I've been a Mac guy for a long time, but I currently don't have any Mac PCs. I just sold my iMac about 6 months ago to build my gaming desktop PC.
So you sold the Mac to buy a gaming rig? Because you were like the head of like the Mac user group or whatever. Like when the Macs at Microsoft mailing list, you were so active on that.
Well, I'm still on the list, but it's just a weird place for me right now. I just don't have any Macs, and I don't see getting any in the near future either. Because as nice as the Retina MacBook Pro is, you know, I'm sort of anticipating that the Surface Pro is going to have roughly the same DPI and touchscreen. So it's hard for me to invest in, you know, a fairly expensive laptop that doesn't have touch when, you know, we're here in Windows 8.
Right.
Kind of an understandable thing why Apple doesn't see it as important as we do. So, you know, it's not like I fault them for not making a touchscreen laptop because their OS doesn't have all these features. But, you know, this is kind of where my bread and butter is. And so, you know, 5 years ago, you could say a MacBook Pro is the best Windows Vista laptop or the best Windows 7 laptop. It's certainly not going to be true for Windows 8.
Well, what is it? What's the new Lion? Mountain Lion? Mountain Lion on my MacBook Pro, and I have Windows 8 in a VM if I need it. But I'm not ready to put Windows 8 on my Mac, and I'm still. I think the jury's still out as far as like who's gonna win. But I got a line on an Ultrabook, which is like a MacBook Air PC, an Ultrabook is. So I'm going to be interested to see if we can make hardware that is as good as the Mac hardware. That would be pretty awesome.
Well, I have a, you know, I haven't obviously seen the Surface because I learned about it the same time everybody else learned about it.
Yeah.
And it's a pretty secret thing, but I have faith that the Surface is going to be a pretty nice PC.
Yeah. Well, in closing, I'll tell you a funny story where I took my wife to Best Buy to show her some of the new thin laptops because she's got an old Dell that's pretty fat. And she's like, well, how do I know if it's a good PC or not? And I was like, well, how can I explain this in a really simple way that will just make sense? And I said, flip the laptop over, and the fewer seams you see underneath, it's probably the better made it is. So we just basically spent an afternoon flipping. It's like, you know, that way that you tell the sex of a turtle. You just flip it over and, like, look at the way that the underneath the turtle's shell is. It's the same thing with PCs, you know. The smoother that the bottom of the PC is, the better it is.
Yeah.
She found that to be a very good good way to tell. Cool. Thanks for talking to me, Brad.
Yeah, it was fun.
This has been another episode of Hansel Minutes, and we'll see you again next week.